Let's go.
You're listening to Making Data Simple, where we make the world of data effortless, relevant, and yes, even fun.
Podcast listeners, Al Martin here, back at you with Making Data Simple. We're going to have some fun today, as we do every day. I have Yuval Bachar. He's a leader in data infrastructure industry and founder and CEO of ECL. ECL being Edge Cloud Link. He has worked at Microsoft, LinkedIn, Facebook, I think all the FANG stocks here, Cisco, Juniper Networks, and is recognized as a top influencer in data centers and edge technology. Yuval is also one of the founders of the Open 19 Project and president of the Open 19 Foundation. His work here focuses on self-healing data centers with machine learning and artificial intelligence, predictive maintenance, and hardware quality control. Here's what I also know about Yuval. He's passionate about driving efficiencies, innovation, and sustainability into digital infrastructure to solve economical, ecological, and community impacts. That's in building and operating data centers. Through his company, ECL is building the world's first off-grid, zero emissions, water-free, sustainable data center powered by hydrogen. And I think this is to go online in Q2, which is, I'm checking my watch here, Yuval. I'm actually curious as to why you're here today, because you got a lot of work to do. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's already online. We'll have to talk about it. Thank you for being here. He is creating a sustainable digital structure for the 21st century. What I want to do today is be able to better understand those technical advances and initiatives and what he and others in the industry are doing and innovating to make it happen. Welcome, Yuval. Thank you for being here on the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Very often we don't get data infrastructure, data centers, AI, and sustainability in one go, but I think we're going to get that today, which is pretty awesome. Could you take a minute to introduce yourself, what your experience is?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been working in the data center industry for the last 15 years. My previous job before working at ECL is actually at Microsoft to develop the AI and machine learning capabilities for self-healing in data centers. It was an eye-opener for me because it was an exposure into the world of mega data centers, cloud directly, and operating how they operate and how they're being built. Prior to that, I was the chief architect of the data centers of LinkedIn. I was working at LinkedIn at early stages when we grew our footprint dramatically, about 10x, both on the server footprint as well as on the networks. And before that, I actually started the hardware networking division of Facebook, aka Meta today, which gave me the ability to actually drive technologies at scale in an open source environment, which was through the Open Compute Project. And before that, I did about 100 years at Cisco. The last four of them were actually at data centers and working with all the hyperscalers, which gave me, again, a tremendous point of view of into data centers. I started my career by dating myself over here at Digital Equipment Corporation, DEC. Yeah. That is about me.
So you got the data center expertise. Why did you leave Cisco to go to Microsoft? And then why did you leave Microsoft to start your own company?
So I left Cisco for the reason that coming from the equipment supplier for data centers and for networks, large network operations, at that point, I understood that to have a dramatic influence on how data centers are being built and to have a strong impact to how things are being done, you have to be at the customer side in this case, which is the Facebooks, the Googles, Amazons, and Microsofts of the world. Cisco could influence to a certain level on what gear is actually being offered, but all of those hyperscalers got to the point that they are building their own stuff. And if you want to influence on large scale, you have to be on the other side. And that made me move from Cisco to Facebook. From Microsoft to ECL, the transition was much simpler. I completed a relatively long run at Corporate America and I said, okay, what's the next thing I want to do? And during COVID, I was sitting for quite a bit of time to actually think about what's the next thing the data centers in the world need and how can I have an impact that will have an impact on my children and grandchildren, and how to do that. And ECL came in mind to actually create a new type of data centers. and that has not been done for a very long time in our industry.
Most people are not thinking about creating a new business during COVID. That's interesting. Yeah. So did you bootstrap this, or are you venture funded? I mean, how did that start it? You just bootstrapped it, huh?
So I initially bootstrapped it for the first year. And when we got to the point that we had to invest significant amount of money to build an actual data centers, we actually did a Zoom-based raising of money. I have not seen my investors when I got the investment. It took quite a bit of time because it was like that, but we were able to actually achieve very strong and very supportive investors, which believe in us in what we're doing and believe in our mission.
Well, so say more on your investors then. You say you've not met your investors. How does that work then? Tell me more about that. Very interesting.
So the fundraising was done through Zoom meetings and a lot of emails. A lot of due diligence has been done directly with email exchange, but face-to-face was just not an option back then. I was lucky enough to have my lead investor to be Molex, a company which is also a subsidiary of the Koch Industries, and Joyner was much easier for me because I have a lot of connections in this world. So once the lead was in place, the Joyner was relatively easy. So I have two investors, Molex and a VC, a standard VC called Hypervise Ventures.
I presume you've met them now, though.
Yeah, oh yeah. Now I've met them, yeah, absolutely.
Now, you also you said data centers and edge technology, which is very different. Are you still focused on both?
Yes, I am. And our solution at TCL is very, very much edge appropriate. The challenge that we had with edge, and I started working on edge in 2014-15 at LinkedIn to give a better experience to our users by optimizing the edge connection, and driven edge since then. And part of the way I look at ECL and the solution of ECL is through the edge, because edge have been defined initially as very small sites, very close to the cell towers. It's morphing slowly to be a more of a regional cloud services that gives low latencies. When you operate in this mode, the edge is actually giving you an advantage when your footprint is small, dense, and off-grid, because in a lot of edge locations, you will not have the power and energy sources that you need to actually deliver heavy AI machines, for example, which is becoming probably the most common IT that's going to be acquired in the next few years.
When I think edge, I often think sensors, but did you say it's more small?
No, so it's one step above the sensors. It's like the aggregation layer of the sensors, the cell phones, the cars, everything. That sits in a what's called an edge data center. That edge data center gives you the ability to do local processing to the data that you're getting, so you don't have to backhaul everything to the public cloud.
Let's jump right into ECL. The world's first off-grid, zero-emissions, water-free, sustainable data center powered by hydrogen. Tell us about it, how it works, how do you came to this revelation? Is anybody else doing it, and what's different about you?
Yeah, so when we started building the concept of ECL, and initially it was myself and then my co-founder joined me as well as the rest of my team, we're thinking about what are the areas that the data centers are being challenged right now. And one area that we identified very clearly is that we are being challenged by energy availability, energy stability, and it's getting worse and worse by the month, not even by the year. And so we decided that we have to run off-grid. And there are two main reasons for that beyond availability and stability is sustainability. If you want to create a sustainable energy-based data center, you have to actually create a real zero-emission site. If you look at our grids today, with all the efforts that we make to make them green grids, they're still very far away from that. California, which is at the edge of that, is about 20 to 26% green. Go to Ashburn, Virginia, it's about 6% green. And other locations in the U.S. are actually in the low teens of sustainability. So to be able to push full sustainability at this point, you have to self-generate. So we decided to self-generate and create a microgrid on site. And then for us, the selection for hydrogen was the most natural thing, because hydrogen is the only fuel solution today in the industry that if you generate energy from it, it is by doing it at zero emission, And the reason that we do not use water is the byproduct for generating energy with hydrogen is water. So you take that water and actually cycle it back into the data center, create a full cyclical connection between the power generation and the cooling system, and create symbiosis between them to make it very efficient and very clean. Now, beyond that, when we look at this and say, okay, what else needs to be fixed in data centers? And one area is definitely the cooling system. When we look at traditional cooling systems of data centers, they have been built and defined 20 plus years ago and have not changed for 20 plus years. There are many more better technologies, better capabilities, better simulation tools, etc., to enable us to redesign the cooling system. So we made a conscious decision to go and redesign from scratch the cooling system. We built a multi-stage cooling system which integrates with our hydrogen. And as a result, we're able to achieve level of efficiency, which is unheard of in the industry, of PUE of 1.05. And PUE of 1.05 has two aspects to it. One is the efficiency is at 5% instead of the average of 60% overhead in the United States. So it means you're saving power by default, which means saving money. But the other aspect of it is you consume the minimal overhead energy that you need to run your IT data center. And when you do that, that available, that extra power that you would have used for overhead would have been, can be used now for IT and enable us to be more efficient. So that's the overall of that. To wrap all of this together, we have an amazing software which is running artificial intelligence when it's operating the data center.
You said 1.05. Is that what you said?
Yes.
What is the normal data center? Just by comparison?
The average in the United States today is 1.6, which means that 60% overhead versus 5% overhead that we are dealing with right now.
Look, I'm not a data center expert by any means. I use them. I've created like software and appliances, et cetera, that fit in the data center. So I get it. Power is a big issue. Cooling's an issue. Could go on down the list. But a lot of times when I have read about data centers and attempting to get to zero emissions, sometimes it costs more or you give more emissions in terms of the investment to get to zero emissions. I presume, obviously, that is not the case here, but hydrogen is the secret sauce then?
Yes. So it's not a secret sauce, but it's the right source. Hydrogen is available in the industry for a very long time, but have never been attempted to use hydrogen as the primary source of energy. We are the first company in the world which is doing that, enabling a hydrogen-based design to drive 24/7, 365 the site. It has its challenges with it, with hydrogen, like supply chain, et cetera, that we were able to resolve at ECL and be able to create a solution which is capable and scalable for data centers. When you generate energy with hydrogen, like I said, byproduct of it is water and water vapor, nothing else. So zero carbon footprint. Now to build the generation of power through the use of hydrogen, we use fuel cells. Fuel cells have a certain carbon footprint on them, but it's a smaller carbon footprint than anything else that you can get in the industry today. Like if you need to put a diesel generator or anything else in your data center, you will pay a much heavier price on carbon footprint. Our site is also does not have a UPS system and does not have a diesel generator in our site, which gives us even a better position from a carbon footprint.
So you can't get hydrogen at the local grocery store. Where do you get the hydrogen? I mean, and is that a problem?
So in the US, there are like five major suppliers of hydrogen, which supplied hydrogen to different industries. Hydrogen has been supplied to industries for over 100 years over here. We can get two models of delivery of hydrogen. One is delivery on truck, and the other one is over the fence, what's called over the fence, which is a pipe delivery of hydrogen. Depending on the location where we are, we either get a connection to a pipe of hydrogen, just like we get natural gas in every other place, or it's being delivered by a truck. Our goal is to get to the point that if it's delivered by a truck, it's delivered by a truck which is actually operated by hydrogen, and it delivers green hydrogen to our site. Are we 100% there yet? No, we will not be able to get 100% green hydrogen everywhere in the United States in the next year or so. But fast forward 18 months to 24 months, every location in the United States will be covered with green hydrogen delivery. from multiple suppliers.
So as you're building this, though, you know, no customer is obviously going to want to see a down system. So you got a fault tolerance. Do you have a backup in case you can't get hydrogen or something? And what do you do then?
Yeah, so our site is rated for 6 nines, which means comparable to a tier 4 data center. And we achieve this by actually pulling fully redundant systems on every aspect of what we do. And let's start from the energy. The energy generator is capable of generating much more than the power that we need from the energy generator to deliver to the data center. And it is sliced into small slices of power generation units. So each one of them is independent, and we can actually take a slice offline, online, and does not have an impact on the overall. Beyond that, we do not have a UPS system. We have a parallel battery that can hold the site for up to 8 hours. When the site is being held for 8 hours, we can do a full maintenance cycle on any other gear that we need. Let's talk about hydrogen and how do we actually back up hydrogen. Hydrogen on site is stored and can hold the site between 4 and 7 days, depends on our load level, and being replenished. But let's assume that there is a situation that we cannot replenish for some reason. There was an earthquake, the roads are closed, or anything like that. We have the capability to generate hydrogen on site from a backup system that is not 100% green, but it is a backup for the backup system. So we should be able to do that. From a logistics perspective, we have multiple sources of hydrogen suppliers. They all can deliver to our site. They're all contracted with us. And we're staggering between them to be able to actually reduce the risk that one of them cannot deliver to us hydrogen to a certain point.
Is it dangerous? Is storing hydrogen dangerous?
Hydrogen in general has a perception of dangerous material. It is stored in what's called a cryo tank. It's a liquid state, right? So it is stored in a cryo tank, which is an extremely safe tank. It's a tank which has double layer of steel with a vacuum in the middle. So it's very difficult for hydrogen to actually leak out of that. It has a lot of, today's tanks, the advanced tanks, have a lot of safety mechanisms in case there is any kind of issue or accident. So from that perspective, the chances of getting a severe accident from a diesel tank versus a hydrogen tank, the chances with the hydrogen tank are lower than a diesel tank. And if something happens with a hydrogen tank like fire, it has a much less impact than what you see in a fire of a large tanks of diesel or gasoline. Because diesel and gasoline basically disseminate everything around it. Hydrogen by default will actually push itself up because it's a very light material. And even if you get fire, it's going to be a very directed fire. Now, we don't want to get fire in any situation. We have a lot of precautions, safety methods, refueling safety methods, and protection within the site itself to prevent, even in case of an accidental fire, that nothing is being impacted by that. And definitely nothing more severe than just the localized fire is happening that will be extinguished immediately by the mechanisms that we have on site.
Now, what are you hosting at the data center? I mean, anything and everything?
Yeah, our data center is special. Our data center can take 50K per rack. So as a result, we can actually host almost anything that we want, from high-density AI racks to high-density server racks. But the beauty of our cooling system is that we can mix high-power and low-power racks together, and which means that we can put any kind of workload, which is low-power racks, like 10 servers, 15 servers, 20 servers, which are the old style, or any very heavy system, which 5-6 DGX systems from NVIDIA can stand next to each other. For the site that we have over here in Mountain View, most of our initial loads are going to be a mix of preparation for an AI cloud customer and people which are running traditional servers.
Are you online?
So our site, the interior of our site is going to be complete in the next 2 weeks, and we're going to energize the site. The complete site and the grand opening is probably 6 to 8 weeks away.
So 6 to 8 weeks. So you have customers lined up, ready to go?
Yep.
Any references that you would make mention of?
I think at this point we cannot share the names, okay. But there's one which is going to be public in the next few days. It's a very interesting company, which is actually doing Second Life for servers, and they will be hosted over here. When they do a Second Life servers and hosted in our site, that's the optimum zero emission solution, zero carbon footprint emission.
Now, in terms of hosting cost, are you at a premium? Are you at market? Are you at discount? Where would you say you fit into the scheme of things?
Excellent question. So from a TCO perspective, because we actually developed and designed the whole solution from the first milligram of hydrogen that comes into the site to the last milliamp that we give to the IT, we're able to optimize the cost. So the baseline cost that we have for building a data center is significantly lower than traditional co-locations. And the operational cost is also compatible or better, and it's going to get better. And when you look at the operational cost of data centers, there are two aspects to it, right? There's the MRR, the rent, and there's the energy cost. Right now, in most areas, and not everywhere, but in most areas, on the pricing that we have for hydrogen, we can beat the price of the grid for kilowatt hours. And in places, in a significant number of places where there isn't any grid connection, like the middle of Santa Clara, then we can definitely beat infinite cost of energy because we do that like that. The trends that we see in the industry right now is energy price goes up, hydrogen price goes down, which means that with time, within a year, 2 years, 3 years, the price of energy generated from hydrogen is going to be significantly better than the grid power.
But today, where is it?
Today, we are at par or better than our competitors, which offer co-location solutions.
You know, as a pause and coming back to you, and you start this up over COVID, everything you're describing seems very complex and very expensive. I mean, is it costly for you? I mean, how do you bootstrap something like that?
So the initial bootstrapping requires a lot of work, which is theoretical work, simulations, a lot of work in architecting things. That is not a very expensive work. When it starts to be expensive is when you start building the site itself, when you have to bring the equipment, et cetera. And that's the point where we actually brought our seed investment.
That makes sense. You must have done a good job selling. I mean, is there anything you haven't mentioned that if I was your venture capitalist funding, you would mention? I mean, what's your 1 or 2 minute pitch?
So the 1 or 2 minute pitch is this is the first and only 24/7, 365 fully sustainable data center. To your question before, is do you have competitors on this? At this point, we don't have any competitors which can build anywhere. There are some data centers in the world which are sustainable, but they're sitting in very specific locations, like in the Nordics in Norway, for example, where the energy is coming from hydro and the cold water is coming from the fjord. But you can't take that data center and move it and put it somewhere else. Our solution is comparable to those data centers, but you can put it anywhere you want. And the second thing around that is, from our perspective, we are creating over here a new category of data centers. We are not trying to compete head-to-head with the old-style co-locations because the old-style co-location cannot be fully sustainable, cannot enable 50K per rack, does not have the management software, and selling you in reality a piece of white space. And that white space you require from you to go and design a data center inside. It's not that simple. ECL deliver to the customer rack-level ready site. Just bring your IT and start running. And we're doing it very, very fast. And part of the reason that we do it very, very, very fast is that we do not deal with the utilities. Today, to deal with the utilities by default, it's a 24 months delay on your project before you even started, even if you get or not getting the power from the utility. We bypass that because we don't connect to the utility. So we can deliver sites in 6 to 8 months. And what the advantage for the customer is that your planning cycle right now, instead of being 2 to 3 years, is becoming 6 to 8 to 9 months. That enables you to optimize your planning cycle, enables you to actually buy the right hardware that you need at the right time, follow the trends. We're seeing the AI trend, which actually exploded in a matter of 3 months. If you have not thought about this in a large company, the next opportunity you have to insert AI machines is 3 years from now. It's not now, because for coming 3 years, everything is pre-booked. We're changing it because we're telling the customer from your PO to the moment that you want to get in, 8 months, 9 months, you actually get the key and you can get in. Now start planning based on that. That is a tremendous advantage to the customer.
So what's the typical timeline? This is something I was not familiar with. And you're right, given the surge in AI, that's a huge value proposition.
Typical data center commitment is 3 years ahead of time. So if you feel that you need 5 megawatts in, let's say, the Ashburn area, now you should have booked it in 2020. If you had not booked it in 2020, it's all sold out. So which means that you have to try and plan 3 years ahead of time and guess, in most cases, what will be the demand in 2 years. In most cases, when you're guessing, you're missing. So that's absolutely, it's very difficult to guess and actually get it right. We are just changing the paradigm, saying, when do you need it? In the next year? Where do you need it? Here's the key.
So I do want to get to AI, but before I do, what has your biggest challenge been in this endeavor so far?
I think the major challenges that we have right now, the initial one was to actually secure the supply of hydrogen. And I think we resolved that, and we have a very good pipeline and a very good supply chain agreements with our suppliers to be able to deliver that. That was the first one. The second one is education. Most people hear hydrogen, they have a little bit of jitters out of it. And it takes time to actually educate both the municipalities that we work at and the neighbors that we have next to us that hydrogen is not dangerous. And we are actually giving higher level of safety measures than any other data centers next to you. So that education cycle is a challenge, but I think we are over the hump. We have all the reports from renowned experts. We have the reports for safety. We have the reports for every aspect of a fire. We have our own procedures for refueling, our own procedures of safety and security. So all of these are already prepared. But it took us time to actually go through that cycle with the municipality. We're building in Mountain View, which is a city in the middle of the Bay Area, which is started very difficult, but now it's like the most helpful city that we can get.
You know, that is, I don't know how to take that. It's surprising because California has some of the biggest restrictions on the planet. So it is amazing that you've turned them around. How long did it take you to turn them around? I mean, not because it was hydrogen or anything, just because it's California, right? Anything you do.
Yeah, I would say it took us about 3.5 to 4 months from using hydrogen, no way, to how can we help you?
I think the problem is people remember the Hindenburg. That's all they can think when you think hydrogen.
Yeah, when you take hydrogen, put it in a paper balloon, what do you expect? Not blow? But when you take hydrogen and put it in a double pan, 7 millimeter steel with a vacuum in the middle, nothing is going to happen to it.
So why is no one else doing this? Why are you the first?
There are a lot of reasons for that. So first of all, it's a disruptive move. And this industry is a relatively traditional industry that came mostly from real estate background. And for them to do disruptive engineering moves is complicated. And they usually won't do that. And you can see that by the fact that our data center world did not change for the last 20 years. And the second thing is a lot of people which have the know-how on how to build data centers and the adventure of actually going build data centers are locked in the large data centers in golden cages, not willing to come out. So it's pretty rare to find a group of people which are willing to take the risk, willing to drive something which is disruptive in the market in the name of creating a new type of data centers, in the name of protecting the future for our children.
Does this mean your exit will ultimately be an acquisition? Because if they can't get there, they'll look at you and say, ECL, like, we're just going to have to take you because we couldn't do this ourselves.
Yeah, I think at this point, we're not looking at an exit. At this point, we're looking into actually showing the best data center in the world and actually having customers and solving problems for our customers. When we get to the point that we have multiple sites, which are a certain size, et cetera, we'll decide on our long-term plan. We don't talk about any exits right now. We're not for sale right now.
So Yuval, what is the most surprising thing that I think would make our listeners, you know, kind of raise an eyebrow over this whole process? Something you don't think of when you're creating a data center. Anything that stands out?
I think the one thing which surprised us is the extreme level of demand that we're seeing is a result of the fact that we lack power in a lot of strategic locations in the United States. We did not expect such a high number of customers to actually come to us instead of us going to them and asking to enable them to build sites off-grid. That was a major surprise to us. The other surprise that we had it's a good surprise, is that things are converging well. So we expected many more problems in the hydrogen-based solution to when we started in, and it converged really, really well and really, really fast. I can tell you from start of build on first location, right? Everything is going first, buying equipment at volume one. We expected to be a longer process, but we started building in November, and the site is going to be up and running in the coming weeks, which is pretty incredible for a data center.
Is this going to open the landscape more, the aperture of opportunity?
Yeah, I think what happens right now is if you talk to real estate agents like CBRE, et cetera, and you say we're building data centers, they will put you immediately in a category of the type of parcels of land that they're looking for you. We changed the paradigm. We basically said we'll take a 1 acre, and we'll take a 2 acre site, and we'll build on it a 5 to 10 meg data center, which was never on their radar. So we suddenly open up a tremendous number of additional land parcels that we can actually use in remote location and in the centers of the cities or in the industrial areas of the cities, which are now for data centers. And when you don't have a dependency on the fact that you have previously allocated power into that site, it makes it very, very easy to access those parcels and enable the growth of data centers in the right place. And the right place for us, the challenging thing that we have beyond the energy and the location, et cetera, is fiber connectivity. When you need fiber connectivity to the network, you need to be close to a place where the fiber is. Otherwise, you have to trench at a very long distance, and that's expensive. But when we actually access now small parcels, which are on the distribution of fiber, we actually get a tremendous advantage because we can sprinkle many, many data centers, which are in the 5 to 10 meg range, in the proximities to where the aggregation point and the exchange points are.
Makes sense. So basically off-grid, still got to be close to fiber, and you got to make sure you've got access from that perspective. Mm-hmm. What about AI? Artificial intelligence, it's the rage, but it's the rage for many different reasons. You know, what's your version of AI here, and how is it making its way into the data center?
So AI right now is becoming, for us, two dimensions we have on AI. One is we run software which is managing the data center with artificial intelligence and machine learning. We collect tremendous amount of data from the site itself, not even touching the servers, and optimizing the way we run the data center to be in the optimal point of operations, both from an energy perspective and cooling perspective. And the AI machine is actually doing it for us based on thousands of entries per second that they're getting from the sensor. So that's, for us, AI is working tremendously. On the customer side, the growth of the requirement to start building AI blocks and AI machines jumped dramatically in the last 4 to 5 months. Now, we targeted our racks to do 50K per rack a year and a half ago, before any of this was happening. And at that point, we said, okay, why do we need 50K per rack? And we looked at all the next generation servers. We looked at the combination of servers, storage, and AI, and we said, okay, we will need 50K. Now, we can fill up racks 100% with AI machines and be able to be in the most effective way utilizing the floor space for AI applications. And AI applications are not necessarily only NVIDIA DGX systems. AI applications are also heavy compute applications, but they need a lot of them. And when you push the rack to a higher level, it gives you an advantage in doing this. AI in general is going to change our lives. that's a general comment.
I got you. But so you're using it to manage the data center, and you're also using it, or you're setting up the data center to manage or take on AI.
Absolutely.
Makes perfect sense. Can you tell us what kind of AI who are you using it from? Can you convey
it? It's our own homegrown AI development that we did.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Well, look, IBM sells a lot of AI. If you want to talk, we'll talk offline.
Absolutely.
All right. Very good. Anything I didn't ask you about the data center AI or otherwise you wish I would have? that you want to make sure gets out there?
I think two things. One is AI is here and it doesn't go away. And we need to prepare for it and make sure that we can enable it in the best way we can. And when we talk about sustainability, create the best sustainable solution for AI, because AI is going to increase the load on the power consumption of data centers dramatically in the coming 2 to 3 years. People thought it's going to be spread to 5 to 10 years. It's not. It's the next 2 to 3 years. And we have to do it smart, because we have an opportunity like that once every 1 or 2 decades to be able to insert technology which is so disruptive into data centers. So we need to do it right, and we need to do it in a sustainable way. And I think we are opening the path for doing this. There might be multiple applications on how to do this, but we believe that ECL is opening the path on how to do this. The second thing is the good, the bad, and the ugly in AI that we need to look at and say, okay, is AI that great, or is AI actually going to create disruption in our life? And my view on that is that AI is a tremendous tool if we use it properly. It is. It gives you tremendous capabilities that humans cannot actually handle in the short run and in the long run. I think the biggest example that I love to quote is they took an AI machine and basically mapped all the proteins in the world, which would have taken 100 years for humans to do manually in a lab. That is a tremendous value to humanity. On the other side of that, AI can be biased, first of all. So it depends how you program it and where it's actually getting the solution. And people start to treat AI as a source of truth. And if you get a bias on any area, in any subject, data from it, you can be a little bit misled. And the second thing is people talking about transitioning to AI controlling more components. That is something that we need to be very careful with. Because when we give away control, it will create significant challenges down the line.
Well, I think you've captured it very well. Certainly my sentiment on AI, but my perspective is that, you know, you want to control your data, you want it to be bound, you want it to be industry contained in that domain, so you're not like scraping the internet, getting any answer, getting any bias, getting hate, you know, whatever the case may be. So I resemble that remark, so to speak.
Yeah, I think AI can be integrated into existing sites, especially to the mega data centers, which have usually unlimited expansion space. But you do it in the same way you did it before. You do it in a way where it's actually not 100% sustainable, and sustainability is very limited. There is an opportunity to actually put a stake in the ground and say AI deployments of small or large deployments need to come with a sustainability sticker on it. And the solution that we are creating is actually creating the blueprint for that sustainability sticker. And we want to make sure that people say, okay, we have the opportunity right now to do it. Let's do it.
That's a great answer, man. I had somebody on my podcast last time, or I interviewed it recently. I don't know when it'll post, but she's also an investor in startups. And I said, what was the number one thing that you look for as you're investing in startups and technology? And she said, the founder. By and far, it's the founder, it's the energy, it's the passion they bring to the room. I have to tell you, I can see the enthusiasm that you have for the technology. I mean, you're all in, you're leaning forward, you're ready to go. It's like a boxer ready to head in. Is that what it was? I mean, were you bored over COVID, or you just look at it and say, now's my time, I got to go do this?
So my story about entrepreneurship is interesting. I have an only daughter, and she asked me multiple times, you have all those ideas, why don't you actually start a company? And my answer to her was, because I want to be with you. You're an only child, and I want to actually be able to be with you when you grow, when you actually go to soccer games and not need to spend 10 or 14 hours in the office every day. And I will open a startup when you go to college. And she remembered that. I told her that when she was 8.
So when
she was 17 and was about to go to college, I said, okay, now you need to open a startup. I said, okay, you got it. So it's not simple. Yeah. I'm not a kid out of Stanford. It's not simple to run a startup. But the advantage is that when you have the experience, and our team over here is highly experienced, you can do things very, very fast that usually takes longer time, and you can take risks which are usually risks that younger people are going to be much more hesitant to take, and a bigger picture. If you look at our solution is actually encapsulating, you can extract from our solution four or five startups. It does not have to be just one. But we thought that the right way to do it is actually to give to our customers the whole solution. And that's why we built it that way. And you need to have certain maturity, professional maturity and personal maturity, to be able to actually take upon yourself such a big project. So from that perspective, I consider myself an evangelist technologist. So that for me, it was the most natural thing to do.
If you're the evangelist technologist CEO, what's your co-founder? There's a persona that he has typically that you don't have.
So he brings, first of all, tremendous knowledge in power generation and power delivery, etc. And he's balancing out my enthusiasm sometimes and actually making sure that we operate in a balanced environment, not taking too many risks and actually delivering the solution that we need at the right time. For me, everything needs to happen yesterday. For him, it's actually, okay, let's make it today.
Well, you delivered on your promise to your daughter. That's awesome. That's noble. What do you do for fun?
Oh, so I played the drums. Up until COVID, I used to be a soccer referee and a coach at some point, until my daughter said, you're not good enough for me.
Now it's time for the startup. All right, good.
I like to watch movies. I like to do a lot of trips. Hawaii is my favorite place in the world.
So, Hawaii, of all places, not Italy, not Rome, not...
I would say between Hawaii and Florence, Italy.
That's all right. And
now, with now a good competitor at Barcelona.
There you go. Now we're talking. Now we're talking. Well, that sounds great. Where can folks reach you and find out more about your company?
So you can find us at ecldc.com. We have all the information over there, and you can contact through there. If you want to reach out to me directly, yuval@ecldc.com. Feel free to send me an email. I'll be very responsive very quickly.
I think we covered it, but I'll ask you again, anything else we didn't mention? This is great. I learned a lot.
I think you had in the original one some of the questions about leadership style and how do you actually drive a leadership in an environment like that.
What's your leadership style?
So my leadership style is always result oriented. I don't care how many hours people put in the office. As long as we get the results, that's fine. It's zero politics. No politics is allowed in our company. If you play politics, you're not going to be here no matter who you are. And it's actually full transparency. We work with our team as one team, and everything is transparent, the good things and the bad things. And that makes everybody in our team feel that they are part of the team. Sharing of our corporate, every one of our employees from the lowest level to the highest level has shares in our company, and everybody is actually working as one. For us, it's like if the power system is working and the cooling system is not working, it means nothing is working. And we need everybody's hands-on to actually fix everything in there. So the style is actually work for other people, so they will work for you. And when they work for you, they will actually make you successful.
I like the fact that everybody shares in success or otherwise. That way you're either you got to be all in the company.
Absolutely.
What's your prediction for data centers? And when I say prediction, it's easy to just say, well, this or that. What is something crazy that you think could come within data centers in terms of your learnings?
I think we're going to see a tremendous jump in density of data centers and localization into urban areas. Most of the large data centers today are in remote areas. If you look at the mega data center operators, they don't come close to the major cities. I think because of the amount of data that we're going to produce, both directions, in and out, we're going to have to move data centers at high density and high performance much closer to the urban areas, which will create a very interesting environment to hire to work with the community when you come into the community, instead of saying, yeah, I'm remote, I'm just going to give you a service. So I think that is a trend that definitely is going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's the next 2 to 3 years. The second thing in data centers, consolidation. There got to be consolidation. There are too many small operators which are left behind with technology and with capabilities and operating right now only on the fact that they are more cost effective. These will probably be consolidated and swallowed by the big guys. That will happen definitely in the data center world. From the large data center operators, they have to get in. They have to get to the point that they believe that they have to redesign their data centers. And some of them already announced it publicly that they have to do that to be able to accommodate the next generation of hardware, the next generation of applications, the next generation of what comes out from their teams or from external suppliers.
Very good. Yuval Barchar, everybody, from ECL, thank you for being here. This has been fantastic.
Thank you very much, Al, for having me.
Hey, listeners, thank you. As always, hit us on almartintalksdata@gmail.com. We'll listen to you if you'd like to be on or if you had a topic you'd like to hear about. We're always listening. Until next time, we'll see you on the podcast.